Good morning, good afternoon, good night, whatever time it may be. Welcome back to an episode of Positivity Spartans. It's your boy Isaiah Hubbard with my co-host as always, Marcellus Majestic James. How you doing today, my brother?
Pretty good, man. Happy to be recording again.
Word, man. It's been a little bit, man. It's been a little bit, and I'm happy to be back too, man, because I love doing this. Today, we're joined by a very special guest, a very good friend of myself and Marcellus's, Tito Valdez, man. What's going on, Tito?
Not much, man. I'm just happy to be here with you two. Haven't talked to y'all in a minute.
Yeah, man. It's been a crazy minute. I think the last time we seen each other was at Jessica's wedding, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. When was that? 2016, 2015?
Yeah, somewhere around there. Yeah, back when things were almost normal.
Right.
It's crazy, man. 2016, it seems like so long ago, but I mean, it doesn't seem like that long ago. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
Time flies, man. How's everything been? How's life?
It's good, man. I mean, I'm just busy, you know, living the Philadelphia life. And I try to get home every now and then, probably once a month or so, but less so during the pandemic. You know what I mean? But
yeah,
just keeping busy. Just keeping busy out here, man.
No, I feel that. Let me give you all a little background on Tito. Tito Valdez is a queer Afro-Latino attorney living in Philadelphia. He represents the Philadelphia Department of Human Services, which is the city agency tasked with investigating reports of child abuse and neglect. Outside of work, he sits on the board of the Attic Youth Center in Philly AIDS Thrift. Did I say that right, or is it AIDS?
Nope, you said it right.
Perfect. He also serves as a commissioner on the Pennsylvania Commission on LGBTQ Affairs after having been appointed by Governor Tom Wolf as an inaugural member of the commission in 2018. Now, this isn't on there. He's also an exceptional point guard. No, that's really, but yo, that's like I said, we haven't talked in a while, and at the wedding, we weren't talking business. But that's an impressive resume right there. That's an impressive bio.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. We're working.
And, yeah, man. And like to know you, to have, I mean, going to school with you almost my whole life, man, to see you doing these things, I'm gonna be real, I always saw you doing big things, bro. I'm gonna be real. You know what I mean? Like, if you run for president, you know you got my vote, man.
I think we talked about it. You'd be my Secretary of Defense.
Absolutely, man. You already know. Absolutely.
Nah, wasn't you voted most likely to be president your senior year?
I was.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nah, but I feel the same way about you two, man. Like, just watching you guys from afar most of the time. I mean, Marcellus, you and I talk a little bit more often, but just watching from afar, it's just incredible to see how incredible you two are and just the incredible young men that you become. It's really cool to watch. It doesn't surprise me, but it's cool to watch.
I appreciate that, man. We just trying to do the right thing, man. You know how it goes.
Absolutely.
So, you know, so today's episode is based around your profession, you know, what you do. Just give a little people just a little more background so they know about, you know, what it is more that you do.
Yeah, I mean, so it's a prosecutorial role. I moved to Philadelphia back in April of 2017 after finishing up with law school. And I actually started doing criminal defense work mostly at Busman Davis in Lebanon, our hometown.
Shout out to Lebanon.
Absolutely, always. And, you know, it was a long commute. I was living in Philadelphia already at the time, and it was a really exhausting commute every single day. So I saw this position with the city, and, you know, my politics are I'm pretty progressive in my leanings and in terms of how I view things. And I never really saw myself representing the government in any capacity, especially not in a prosecutorial role. But I've found that it's a good opportunity to kind of advocate for good changes from within, specifically with the child welfare system, whether it's disparity as it relates to Black and brown communities. Especially, you know, and I think that when you have Black and brown faces in these spaces, you're able to have, advocates from within and perspectives that maybe weren't there before. So it's been a really refreshing experience. But essentially, my client is the city agency that receives reports of child abuse, neglect, that, you know, they go out, make sure that the kids are safe. We try to keep kids in their homes whenever safely possible. But sometimes it's not possible. And, you know, that's kind of where I come in. I'm kind of the face of the city as it relates to that litigation. So.
Got you.
Yeah.
Okay. So now you're I don't want to say opponent. So your counterpart would be the defendant?
Yeah. So basically in the courtroom, there's three other attorneys outside of me. The children have their own attorney. And then each parent has their own attorney, assuming that it's a two-parent household. So it's typically 3-1. we don't like to see it that way. We try to keep it as little adversarial as possible. We try to focus on families as much as we can, but that's typically the setup.
Absolutely. I got
so you mentioned that it's pretty much 3-1 and you're being the one, right?
Yeah.
So how do you approach that, knowing that, you know, there's more people, literally more people against you? Like, how do you utilize that in making your prosecution?
Yeah, I mean, so it's really long hours. I generally work 12 to 13 hours a day, sometimes on the weekends, just making sure that I'm pretty meticulous in my study of the cases and the relevant laws. But also, like, it's about creating a rapport with your colleagues, you know what I mean? Like, so that they don't see you as this ogre on the opposite side of the courtroom, and you can kind of create deals where there's really no dispute about basic issues. So it's pretty fine. Like, people learn to trust you and understand that you're not there to break apart families. You're just there to make sure that kids are safe. So it's really about, you know, making sure that people know what your intentions are and making sure that people know that you're there to really create change from within. So if you're asking for or advocating for a removal in a particular case, it's because it's absolutely necessary.
Right. I think, I think media plays a part in giving you guys a negative stigma sometimes. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of movies where, you know, you guys are seen as the bad guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we see that even with. Attorney, and then she became a criminal prosecutor, and she gets a bad rap. I mean, I know that some of the positions that she's taken over the years were challenging, and you know, she's definitely evolved in her thinking in some ways. But I really do fundamentally believe that, in as much as these systems are here, whether it be criminal justice or child welfare, it's better to have Black and Brown people that can relate to the plight of of people on the ground, because they're going to be here. Like, these systems are going to be here. You know what I mean?
For sure. We talk about, you know, representation all the time on the podcast. You know, representation matters in every aspect, you know, in the courtroom, you know what I mean, in the doctor's office, dentist's office, wherever, you know, seeing people that look like you, man, it just makes you a lot more comfortable.
It does. I mean, and you know, there's ethics rules around me talking to the parents by themselves. Obviously, I would never do that, but I often do get permission from their attorneys to talk to them, to just kind of give them assurances that I literally took this job because I believe in keeping all families together. But in particular, I have an emphasis on Black and Brown families. And that's just because of the disparity that does exist. Like, I'm not, you know, I literally took this job because of that. So, you know, I try to, is that, like, not even in just in terms of race, like there's a lot of representation matters as it relates to LGBT people as well. Like, the, you know, in the city of Philadelphia and in the country, there's a lot of disparities in terms of LGBT youth homelessness. And, you know, they end up in the foster care system. And more often than not, it's literally because they were kicked out of their homes because of who they are or who they love. And, them seeing a queer person in the courtroom with them kind of gives them assurances that, you know, they won't continue to be traumatized in this system that, you know, historically has been traumatizing for LGBT folks. You know, so that's my commitment.
Yeah, that's dope, man. Cause you know, honestly, you know, I can relate to the Black and Brown community, but you know, I can't relate to, am I saying this right? The queer community or how?
Yeah.
The queer community?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Cause you know, I don't want to offend nobody. So, with the queer community, you know what I mean? I can't really relate. And it's dope that you can do both.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's an interesting point about what term to use in particular. That definitely was a term that wasn't used for a really long time, but I feel like the LGBT community has sort of reclaimed it. So you'll hear it a lot more often, queer community. I mean, I identify that way. I put that in my bio for today. Yeah.
Absolutely. I love it, man. You know what I mean? Embrace who you are.
Absolutely, man. That's all you can do.
For sure. Now, I remember there was a time where, you know, you would question whether you wanted to go by Tito or your government name. You know what I'm saying? I'm glad you stuck with Tito. You know what I mean? Because that's how I know you. You feel
yeah,
me?
No, I decided. Yeah, I remember that. I remember that too. I remember having discussions about it on social media. But I just, this is who I am. You know what I mean? Everybody knows me by this. My professors from college and law school know me this way. By, you know, the judges I've appeared in front of know me as Tito. It just doesn't make sense to go by anything else.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. If that's how they refer to you in the courtroom. Okay, that's
yeah,
great.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love to hear it, man. You're like, let them know you're big in the community as well too, right?
I'm trying, man. I really am trying. Like I definitely took a little bit of a break just because of life stuff that's happened over the last couple of years. I kind of took a break to kind of just figure out what's important to me, make sure that I have my values in check. And so I kind of just took a break from community organizing, but I'm getting back into it. I'm getting back into it and happy to be. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with self-care, man. Don't ever apologize.
Yeah, absolutely. No, sometimes we need that break.
Yeah, for sure, man. I know there's times I need it, man. I'll be going hard for weeks at everything, you know, it seems. And like you get to a point where you're like, man, hold on. I gotta take care of me for a second. You know what I mean? If you don't take care of your temple, man, you can't really give you the best you to everybody out there that you're trying to help.
Especially when you're working in these fields, right? Like they're helping professions and you're, you know, there's a lot of vicarious trauma that you absorb. Like my day is typically just reading reports of just the most awful fact patterns that you know, read about on TV and watch about, you know, read about in the newspaper and watch on TV. And it's real life. It's real life kids and families that you're tasked with servicing. So, you know, it's important to kind of take a break and make sure that you're okay in the process.
Yeah, it's not like sitting at home watching a couple episodes of Law and Order. That's real life. You know what I'm saying? That's actual things. And, you know, I'm very big on, you know, your mind is a receptor. Yeah. And, you know, that goes for both positive and negative. So, I mean, you absorbing all that, not necessarily negative energy, but all that adverse energy through the cases and everything. Does that takes a toll on you personally?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think it's especially been difficult during the pandemic because prior to the pandemic, mm-hmm. I was still playing basketball and, you know, I was actually playing in three separate leagues in the city. You know, so we, you know, I would at least play three times a week, full court games. And that was an incredible release, mm-hmm. as you guys know. I mean, it's an incredible sport. And I haven't been able to play since March, you know, so it's been interesting being creative about how to stay fit. I've tried to run, you know, I do, you know, little home workouts here but it's definitely in addition to, you know, the fitness piece of it, therapy, man. And, you know, therapy is something that we got to talk more, especially, you know, in Black and Brown communities, especially Black and Brown men. Like we don't talk about the need for therapy enough. It's this huge stigma around mental illness, and it's unfortunate. And I think it's, you know, you two, especially like in the military, I feel like it's definitely like the stigma carries into that profession significantly. I don't know.
So it kind of was like that. Initially when I joined, people talked about it. It was like, go do it. But like the Sergeant Major before the one that we currently have, Sergeant Major of the Army, Dan Daly. So one of the reasons he got selected was because he chose to actually go get mental help. And he was like a huge advocate for mental health because the dude went through like 6-7 deployments. So now we have so many resources for mental health. It's just the fact of getting someone to go do it. So like a lot of times you have to like hand walk someone to go seek assistance because they won't do it themselves. So the stigma is kind of dying away.
That's great to hear.
Yeah, it's starting to die away, and there's so many resources now because like you can talk to people and then not be written on paper. And that's like some people's biggest fear because they want to go for like promotions and stuff. And their evaluations might get looked at like, well, you saw the mental health facility on blah, blah, blah. So there's resources that aren't technically written down. And I think people are starting to utilize it more than they were in the past.
That's good to hear. I mean, like even in my profession, I wrote a paper my last year in law school about after you take the bar exam, you have to go through this thing called the character and fitness process. And they're looking at like your finances, they're looking at your criminal history, but they also ask you about your mental health history. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. what happens is that people just don't go get help. Like I think the stat is 1 in 4 law students experience some form of mental illness, whether it be depression, anxiety, or a combination of the two. And unfortunately, because of this mental health inquiry that's a part of your ability to become a licensed lawyer, people just don't go get help. You know what I mean? Because they're afraid that it'll be a bar to them getting their license. And it's silly. It's silly because what ends up happening is that you're not protecting anybody from mentally unstable lawyers. You're actually making people mentally unstable because you're not letting them get the help they need, you know? So it's kind of self-defeating.
I'll be completely transparent. When I was going through, you know, my depression and everything, and I was seeing mental health in the Army, before I guess policies changed, I was trying to go airborne. And one of the reasons why I couldn't go airborne is because I had went to see mental health. And, you know, that was around the time, you know, where I had the option to either re-enlist in ETS. And it was like, damn, I can't even, you know what I mean? I can't even do what I want to do now because I had that on my resume, basically. I mean, and it was one of the deciding factors of me getting out.
Yeah. No, it's sad, man. I mean, that's one of the big things that I'm like, as I return to community organizing, I mean, you guys see my social media, but I try to post a lot about my own mental health journey just because, you know, people see me as a person that's on paper, at least successful. And I've accomplished a lot, you know, in the last 28 years. Right. And if I can also suffer from depression and anxiety, I'm diagnosed with both clinical depression and anxiety, then anybody can, you know what I mean? Like, it's not just, sometimes it's a chemical imbalance. Like sometimes it's literally not situational. Like someone that is successful, both personally and professionally, can also suffer from mental illness, and it happens all the time, you know? So it's important that we talk about it.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we're big advocates here. I mean, I see a therapist personally, you know what I'm saying? I push for it. I mean, if I'm talking to people, I tell people like, yo, you ever thought about seeing a therapist? Because it helped me. You know what I mean? People don't realize, but Positivity Spartans is a form of my therapy. You know what I mean? Getting out here and talking, being able to, you know, reconnect with people that I know, you know, connecting with newer people, it's an uplifting experience for me. You know what I mean? It's real therapeutic, man. So like I said, you know, thank you for being on the show and thank y'all for listening, because it's a part of my mental health and it's something we have to take very serious.
No, and I mean, I think it's a journey too. Like I went through, my current therapist is my third. So sometimes people feel like they go to a therapist and they don't have that connection, and they feel like it's because therapy generally doesn't work. And sometimes it's like romantic relationships. Like sometimes the connection just isn't there, and that's okay. You just have to keep searching until you find that right therapeutic relationship. And it took me three tries. Like I went through two therapists, and both of them just, I didn't vibe with them. So, you know, this third person that I'm with now, I've been with her for like 2 months and she's fantastic. You know, I'm glad that I continue to search, but sometimes it's for a task, you know, you got to keep looking.
Yeah. And there's, also different types, you know, of therapy. Like when I first started with the current therapist I had, he had me doing a type of exposure, and you know, even the therapy itself was triggering my anxiety. So I mean, we sat down and we talked, and now we're going through a different route that sort of you know, it sort of caters and suits me better to deal with what I'm going through. You know what I'm saying? So it's definitely kind of a trial and error.
My first therapist, she had me doing these wellness activities. It was like, I don't want to call them weird because I'm sure they work for some people, but like it was like these, like, for me, strange, like, shoulder roll activities. And I kept telling her, like, if I'm more anxious now, like I have arthritis now, like you know what I mean? Like you didn't help me. You didn't help me at all. Like, I'm just in pain now. So she wasn't receptive to that criticism that it wasn't working for me. So I had to, that's why I ended up having to go somewhere else. But
No, for sure, man. For all
right. So mental health. Back on the prosecutorial role. Is that the proper way to say it?
Yeah. Prosecutorial role. Yep.
Yeah. So back on that, what are some positives you say about doing that job?
Yeah, I mean, so it kind of goes back to what I was saying, right? Like, I really do think that, the way the office and the city, like, you know, as it relates to child welfare specifically, I think that there have been conversations that maybe wouldn't have happened if I wasn't there. And I can say that about all of my Black and Brown colleagues. Like, we are pushing conversations that otherwise wouldn't have occurred, you know what I mean? And you know, it's just been incredible. Like, even in the way that we advocate for kids, like LGBT kids in particular, Black and Brown kids in particular. Right. I mean, I really do think so. The problem with the law is that we often look at the law as this like neutral source of authority. But the problem is that it's written by mostly white men, right? That have no connection to poor people, black and brown people. And so it's not really neutral, right? It's really a reflection of a negotiation of interests. And unfortunately, black and brown people aren't at the table. They're not there writing the laws. I mean, it's changing. The country is changing little by little. And so, you know, when you have people, black and brown people, women, LGBT people at the table, you can really affect change, even as the laws are written. Like, you don't even have to change the laws. You can just change the way that they're interpreted and enforced. You know, like, I can look at a home where, you know, say for just a hypothetical example, you know, there's a single mom living with two kids in a single room. Mom is sleeping on a couch and the kids are sleeping on the bed. Some might see that situation as neglectful. They might see that as a home that's unfit, that the kids need to go into foster care. Whereas, like, I grew up very poor, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so I see that situation. Mm. I see a mom grinding for her two kids. And I see that as a, you know what I mean? I see that as a strength. So I can be from within advocating for that family to stay together and maybe just give them resources to find a bigger place. But, you know, we're not going to put these kids into the system. You know what I mean? Like, you can advocate in that way from within when you have that experience. So it's been good. I really have enjoyed it. I didn't think I would. Like I said at the beginning, I don't think I've ever imagined that I would be representing the city, you know, any government entity. I always thought that I would be on the outside, kind of shaking things up from the outside, but it's been really refreshing to do it from the inside.
Yep. That's dope, man. Affecting your own people in a great way, in a positive way, man. That's a dope feeling.
We're trying.
Can't be mad at it, man. That brings me to today's quote for the episode by Lydia Maria Child. Excuse me. Law is not law if it violates the principles of eternal justice. What do y'all think about that?
I mean,
that's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
That's pretty. Right. Back to what Tito was saying, like, the lawmakers, even if they're not trying to be, they're biased in the way that they make those laws. So if you don't have that representation there, there's just going to be like, well, we're trying to do this. And then you got your second and third end effects on what they're doing. They may not see that, or they may purposefully be doing it, but I'm hoping that they're not, you know, but that's what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, I remember, I want to say my second year of law school, I took a class on juvenile justice, and there was a conversation about corporal punishment. And the question asked by the professor was whether corporal punishment was ever, you know, appropriate. And there was a very sharp division in the room between the white folks and the black and brown folks. And, you know, I'm not suggesting that parents should be able to abuse their kids. Obviously, like, that's why I do what I do. But, you know, the reality is that when black and brown kids are quote unquote bad or incorrigible, the consequence is death. You know what I mean? Like, you don't, like, the when you have a run-in with the police as a black or brown kid, it could be lethal. You know what I mean? So, like, some of the forms of discipline that white families can impose on their white children, it's not enough, because you really, like, the consequence of bad behavior, quote unquote bad behavior, is not the same. Like, we're not living in the same, we're not having the same experiences.
In the same
dimension. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's evident, you know what I mean, in recent news with everything that's going on. You know, it seems like mental health is only brought up for one side of the story.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not bared out by stats either, right? Like, the reality is that people that suffer from mental illness are more likely to be victims of crime, not to perpetuate them. You know what I mean? Like, there's a problem with guns in this country that we should be talking about. There's a problem with white supremacy in this country that we really haven't talked about. I mean, we talk about it every time there's a video of an unarmed black man or woman being murdered by the police, but outside of that, there really aren't broad discussions. We don't want to have the conversation.
Yeah,
conversations happen. Pretend that we're colorblind, and that's not the solution. Absolutely. You know? Like, I don't want you to not see my blackness. I want you to embrace it.
Right, embrace it.
You know,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Has there ever been a time in your profession where being queer you know what I mean, or being black.
You know, candidly, I haven't had many issues with that here in Philly. But definitely I did in Lebanon, and it was part of the reason that I left. You know, I remember specifically going to my first Lebanon County Bar Association event and being stopped at the door, you know, and you know, the response that I got from the person was, you know, this is for attorneys. And I was walking into the facility.
What year was it?
2017, right after I was licensed, you know, and I was walking in with other new attorneys who just happened to be white. You know, so, you know, they were also unfamiliar faces, but they weren't stopped at the door. Only I was. It's constant reminders that, you know, you have to prove yourself in a way that your other, you know, your white colleagues just don't have to, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And I mean, I remember that. I spoke at a BLM rally that year. Well, this was actually 2016 after the Philando Castillo and Alton Sterling murders. I spoke right in front of the courthouse. And I spoke a lot because it was the same summer that those officers in Dallas were killed. And I remember I spoke about both. I spoke, you know, you can absolutely be in solidarity with, you know, men and women in uniform that do their jobs and just want to keep their community safe. And at the same time, acknowledge that there are problems in the criminal justice system. You know what I mean? Like you can do both.
Absolutely.
And so I didn't think, absolutely.
I have family members.
I know you do, you know, and you know, there's no, you know, I didn't think that there was anything divisive about what I said, but I became aware pretty quickly that my employer at the time was not happy with me potentially alienating clients. And it's part of the reason why I left, because, you know, like, that, you know, I went to law school specifically to be an advocate for Black and brown communities. And I wasn't going to silence that just because I was working in my hometown. I did want to work in Lebanon and, you know, kind of be a role model for other Black and brown kids. There were no other Black attorneys in the city or in the county, really. There were none. Right. I don't think there are any still. But, I couldn't do it if it meant having to be silent. So...
Right. No, I stand by you on that, man, because there's no reason why you should have to be silent. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, you shouldn't have to shrink yourself because you're in a small pond.
Yeah.
So.
Right. Right. It's just the closed-mindedness, you know, and it's unfortunate because, you know, I love my hometown, but it's just the closed-mindedness that still lurks there that, you know, it keeps me away, too. Absolutely. You know, I mean, there's some beautiful places, you know, surrounding Lebanon, Pennsylvania. And, you know, it's growing as a community and everything, and it's starting to change. But, you know what I mean? It needs to happen. It needs to be addressed. And there's some I talked to a gentleman, you know, who has an organization out there, you know, making some changes for the Black and brown community, man. And I'm excited for it.
Because there's definitely some leaders that are really, you know, doing a lot of really important work there. I mean, Spalding is one of them, I would say. Noah Starry, like, you know, absolutely. I mean, I don't. Like, I love Noah Starry. Noah's my boy. Like, he's...
You know what's funny?
Yeah, that's our dog.
When Noah came on the episode, he talked about how you guys were roommates. And he was just like, man, I was like, man, I don't want to do this college thing. And Tito's like, no, man, you can do it. You can make it, blah, blah, blah. But it's just funny how things come full circle. Yeah, no,
that's my boy, man. And right. I remember that conversation well. Like, he... And you know what? I think he's doing a lot better than some people that, you know, went through... the four-year thing. And it's just a reminder that it's not for everybody. Like, you don't need a college degree to be successful. You absolutely do not. You know, that was my path, but that's just because I'm a big nerd, you know? Like, I... you know, like... Yeah, that's my boy. And I'm so proud of him and everything that he's doing. He's an incredible father. He's, you know, he's just all around an incredible person. I can't say enough good things about him. So...
Yeah. Right, for sure. Absolutely. So the tides are changing, absolutely, man. So it's good to see. I mean, it's great to see, but it's unfortunate that you had to go through that.
You know, we onward and upward. You know,
absolutely, man. With that, man, what's so before a case, man? What's some music that you bumps? I know you're a big Beehive.
You know, it kind of depends. Like, it kind of depends on the vibe. Like, if it's gonna be something, like, I'll be honest. Like, I listen to a lot of jazz. Like, I just kind of want to relax. Okay. So, like, Gregory Porter is kind of my go-to. I love Gregory Porter. And I like Neo Soul. Like, I love Erykah Badu, India RE, Flowetry, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I just want to relax.
Feel good music.
If I need to feel like a gangster, then Gangsta's Paradise. But more but more often than not, I just kind of want to relax, you know? So just something jazzy or some neo soul.
No, I dig it, man. I dig it. I gotta shout out my sister this episode, Jocelyn, man, because she put me onto a song I ain't never heard before.
Okay.
By George Benson. It's called Turn Your Love Around. Bro, you ever want to wake up and, you know what I mean, get a little pep in your step? play that song, man. Yo, it had me dancing through the kitchen, cleaning stuff. I'm talking about slime, right, bro. So like Bruno Mars, bro. Music is always great for the soul, man. But hey,
of course.
I want to thank you again, Tito, for joining the show, man. You said you're a long time listener, man. So I appreciate you, man.
I appreciate y'all too. And I appreciate what you're doing. This is a good thing.
Yeah, man. We're trying to keep it up. Me and Marcellus for Lane, man. We're going to do a thing. Speaking of Lane, man, shout out to my man Lane. He's not on the episode today, but my man is up for promotion. He'll be getting promoted. So shout out to my boy, man. I love to see success for all my people. So shout out to you, dog.
Yeah, if y'all get the chance, go slide on his page, Eric Lane, and congratulate him.
Yeah, man. Go ahead, congratulate the boy. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, as always, positivity, prosperity.